director who, shot by shot, scene by scene, day by day, works with every member of the crew to further the story. And it is the vision of the director that takes an ordinary movie and turns it into a work of art.
And we're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, and Oscar rolling through when we made a decision about our final category reviews. Apparently there's going to be more than one left, right?
We're going to split them up. Yeah. We have the screenplays on deck, but we'll wait till the WGAs come in.
Makes sense.
We can talk more intelligently about those, although that's debatable. We do have a director category to attack today, though.
And that's what we're going to do. That's also Mike. I am co-host Mike One, and this is Mike, and Oscar. We're doing another category review of the best director category that the Oscars have. We did some exciting stuff in the coming days, though, and we're going to be pretty busy coming Oscars week, so we figured we'd touch on that at the top here and at least fill you in. So, Mike, what's been going on in MMO world here?
We've had some awesome guests on the show the last few weeks. We had Brendan Lee Mulligan from College Humor.
Very thankful and fortunate and humbled by all of them.
Yeah, we have Headgums, Riley, Anspaugh, and Jeffrey James.
Comedic minds that are well beyond their years.
We just spoke to Scott Feinberg of The Hollywood Reporter. This was special and timely for us because, you know, we've been following him for a long time. And you know, when you get a guest on MMO, this is someone we really think the world of.
Yeah,
just like we're three for three in that regard.
Yep.
And now Scott just really blew our minds with how much time he gave us. He was only supposed to give us a little bit of time, gave us a lot of time. He really talked about his origins. He gave a lot of sage advice.
So much insight and just naturally occurring wisdom from his years. He actually talks about how he got to where he is. He talks about this year specifically and in general, some big picture stuff. We could not thank him enough for his time, The Hollywood Reporter, for letting him talk to us, and really he opened up his vault. And I mean, you understand if you listen to that why he is the best in the business.
And I think we were good because he put us at ease. He's the master interviewer of the world. He's got the SAG-AFTRA, he's got the awards chatter podcast, all the Q&A's for SAG. But bottom line is, there's no better podcast to listen to out there if you want to hear interviews of the stars of all the Oscar nominees.
Yeah.
Really, he's got interviews with these nominees here. The latest one I just listened to, Alfonso Cuarón, is a hell of a podcast. It's thoroughly interesting. You get a lot of backstory on the Three Amigos. Go check that out. Subscribe on iTunes, all that good stuff.
Yeah, it's awards chatter from THR, The Hollywood Reporter. That's Scott Feinberg's forecast. Once again, thank you to him. But that will be coming out, our interview with him. It will be coming out Tuesday. We think we're either going to be every day this Oscars week, or at least most days. We'll probably do 6 out of 7, if not 7 for 7, and then 10 of 10 from there on out.
We might just release an episode that's like 3 seconds of us just going, we're tired!
Sleep will definitely be at a premium, but that's on the horizon. You have that to look forward to. We'll have more concrete plans as to what's in the immediate future on Monday with MMO Weekly. We'll be able to hype that up, but we just recorded that with Scott today. Wanted to give you a heads up to look out for that because that really was a special episode for us, and I think we're very proud of it and very thankful and gracious to him.
Thank you, Mr. Feinberg, and we talked about some of the other categories we've covered thus far in our category reviews, and today we got the director to really attack.
Yeah, we're dwindling down to the big categories left to give category overviews to. If you have not joined us yet for a category review, like this episode will be, what those are is basically now that the Oscar nominees are out, with the Academy Awards show obviously being a week from Sunday now, depending on when you're listening to this, it may be more or less than a week away now. We take the individual categories, and we go one by one through the nominees in those categories, and we present reasons and a blueprint, a map, as to why each individual nominee will win the Academy Award and why also they will not win the Academy Award. So even when we have categories such as director, which seem to be done in stone, and they seem to be all set and already decided, we still like to go through them and kind of give our thoughts and try to play devil's advocate as to why they may see a massive upset, just to prepare you, because again, we just never really know when it comes to the Oscars, especially in a year like this year.
Especially this year. Listen to Scott if you don't believe
exactly. us. Exactly. So it's going to be a fun practice. We always enjoy doing it, but how we usually start these is that we go through the category and we talk about who didn't make the cut. And those are colloquially termed the snubs, Michael. Who are the snubs for Best Director this year?
Ryan Coogler is my number one snub here from Black Panther. He is just doing it all in that movie. He's got a blockbuster. He's got some serious drama that he's pulling off and some innovation with the script. He's doing his first Marvel movie and just knocking it out of the park. This has gained a lot of momentum in recent weeks for Best Picture. It's won most of the awards that it's being nominated for. We are surprised he is not nominated here.
I have no idea how that movie has gotten momentum, having such a lack of nominations at the most recent major precursors,
people
such as
are
the BAFTAs.
Coming to their senses.
And now, yeah, man, maybe it's just a matter of that pendulum swinging back. Bradley Cooper will be the first one, apparently, to tell you that he got snubbed from this category, which may rub some people the wrong way.
He's been out there. I don't know if he was hanging out with Gaga too much because he's misunderstood now. I know Gaga went through
that's
a phase.
That's a fair point.
Or
yeah,
17.
That's a good analogy there.
Where she's been misunderstood, but Bradley Cooper's kind of misunderstood right now. I don't know if he's getting his message across. He needs a new PR person.
Maybe our biggest snub for the category in terms of Wee Mikes is Bo Burnham for Eighth Grade. Didn't get out there. Does not see his name here, even though he ended up beating Bradley Cooper for Best New Director at the DGA Awards.
ROSP of Eighth Grade just gushes for like an hour and a half about everything he's doing with the composition of that film. It's high degree of difficulty. He's making you feel so much. I am shocked he is not getting at least a nod somewhere in this award season. And we're very upset about that because we thought this movie was going to be a surefire, at least a one nomination.
You got to imagine he'll be back with this being his first effort. And not that we want to, make this episode all about Scott Feinberg as well, but he has a fascinating conversation with Bo
yes.
Burnham on Awards Chatter. Be sure to go check that out if you're interested in Burnham at all.
Deborah Granick from Leave No Trace,
sure.
Mike. She 100%er on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well-deserved. Certainly well-deserved. I mean, it's a fascinating movie. She did a hell of a job really going to these places and showing you what they have and all the foliage and helps with the scenery. We go back to the systemic issue. Why are there no female directors in this category?
Right.
Well, they don't have the big opportunities. Deborah Granick may have been the closest we had to a major picture, and it's probably on most people's top 20 lists of the year,
yeah,
top 15.
It's a tiny film, no budget,
mm-hmm.
Guerrilla filmmaking style, released in last spring, this time last year, month or two from now. So it really did not get a layout like anything else. And that's really the problem with this year's slate of female directors.
Mm-hmm.
None of them got the backing for an Oscar push.
No,
absolutely. We thought O'Rourke with Mary Queen of Scots, that really didn't happen for that film.
Nope.
Chloe Zhao is next.
Next name on the list here. Chloe Zhao, she had the writer. She last year's Independent Spirit Awards and this year's Gotham Awards. She did well at both
another
of those.
Another spring release, though.
And another low to no budget picture and just making mountains out with little molehill money, it would
very
seem
true.
Like.
Very true. Peter Farrelly kind of talked his way out of this nomination, I think.
Probably rightfully so.
From
at this
Green
point,
Book.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, that speech at the Golden Globes, and he's given a lot of speeches throughout award season. He should be proud of his movie. He made a good movie, I
sure.
think. I really do think that. I know
he made an entertaining movie.
We've been hard on him. And in terms of making a commercial film that makes a lot of people happy, he did more than did his job. It has a nice message. Now, we've detracted from the film already on many occasions, and I just wish they wouldn't portray the film like it's the one that should save the world.
Right.
Like it's the most important movie ever.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can double down on it, but there's what he's been doing, which has been tripling, quadrupling, and, synquapling, if that's the word that I just made up.
Synquapling.
Yeah, down on that ideal, so I don't think he's making many friends. But speaking of being misunderstood...
Yeah, snub number some synquapple here.
Damien Chazelle for First Man. It's been a long day of recording already. Damien Chazelle for First Man, one of our favorites again on the year. Never really seemed to find his footing amongst pundits or critics or people in the Academy.
He directed the shit out of that movie.
Such a good job.
This makes no sense.
Yeah.
This makes no sense because it's a technical marvel. Even if you don't like the story or you have your qualms with the things
your
omitted.
Your qualms, as we'll say, yeah.
Synquapled qualms.
Yeah, thank you.
With the story, I can't believe that's a thing now. It's ended immediately. I think Damien Chazelle should have been nominated more than
I have a feeling
anybody.
As this award season grows older and we look back, I think First Man, I just cannot imagine that doesn't find its audience in later years. And I don't know if it'll be a cult classic or something like that, but I have to imagine people are going to regret how it was treated this award.
Christopher
season.
Nolan was nominated last year for Dunkirk.
Right.
This is on that
yes,
level.
I
no
totally
question
agree.
About it.
Absolutely.
What
agree.
Are you thinking, Academy? Marielle Heller from Can You Ever Forgive Me? We had our ups and downs with that movie in our OSP, but we do agree that it was a strong composition from her. You know, this movie is, flows really smoothly. The subject matter isn't all that stirring, and she makes it into a pretty watchable film there.
And again, you could talk about the issues with these women helm pictures and getting the low budgets that they did, and needing to make chicken salad out of chicken shit, as the saying goes. Mariel Heller is the same way. Lynn Ramsey's the same way.
That subject matter was boring, and she made a compelling movie out of it. But and everybody recognizes in Hollywood right now, because she's got The Case Against Eight, she's got the Mr. Rogers movie. They are giving her big projects to do, and that is a good sign.
Yes.
And you said Lynn Ramsey.
Lynn Ramsey from You Were Never Really Here. You could fall her into that category of how women were kind of mistreated. And again, this year, not that it's an excuse, but it's kind of like the mulligan, right? Like, we had the Me Too movement. We had these big feministic empowerment things. That happened at last year's Oscars. They've really done an undertaking. Hopefully, they are sweeping the industry. These movies were the ones that were already in production when that movement was taking place.
Sure.
So it's kind of easy to forgive these. I don't know whether or not that's right will be dictated by what actually happens going forward in years with how women are treated in the industry.
Yes. We say that because being cautiously optimistic. That
fingers crossed. We are very hopeful. We have faith in Hollywood actually doing the right thing. Whether or not that will be, faith will be trusted or misplaced, as we will see as we go forward.
Another surprise snub, Barry Jenkins, If Beale Street Could Talk. I thought the Academy would go for him this year with that movie, as good as it is, with that movie as stylish as it is, you know, coming off of Moonlight. This did not disappoint us, really, at the end of the day, after we finally got through that OSB. That was a long one. But I definitely think that movie was worthy, and I'm upset it's not nominated.
You can say the same about Christopher McQuarrie. He had quite the amount of difficulty in pulling off what he did.
I got the devil horns in the air right now.
I mean, practical effects were taken to a whole new level. Stunts were taken to a whole new level, and it all played in stereo to this plot beautifully with Mission Impossible Fallout. But of course, it's an adventure movie and an action movie, so why would it ever get nominated?
It will never get nominated when it stars Shmom Schmooze.
There you go.
I fail.
I don't even think the people could know who they're talking about.
I fail at, you know, weird diction comedy today. That's a kick-ass movie. Yeah. It's an action genre film. It's not going to get nominated for Best Picture in our generation right now.
Right.
Maybe later. John M. Chu, Crazy Rich Asians, another film that got pigeonholed, I think, because everybody thought it's a rom-com. It's a feel-good movie. You know, they picked the wrong popular films to promote and nominate elsewhere. Why Crazy Rich Asians is not 10 times better than those films on everybody's brain, I don't get.
Paul Schrader for First Reform. This could be the old Oscars puzzle theory of they decided to give him the original screenplay nod and nominees, so why do we need to reward him twice for the same thing? Could be one of the victims of that line of thinking, but he finds himself on the outside looking in here in this category.
It's a reserved directing job, but he did do a lot in terms of the screenplay. He got rewarded there.
Go watch that Hollywood Reporter video of that Writer's Roundtable on YouTube. I have a whole new respect for that man. He is nuts with his knowledge of old Hollywood.
You wonder if The Ballad of Buster Scruggs was released elsewhere, if it got a major theatrical release, if it would have done better or worse. Feinberg's got some thoughts coming up.
One of the running themes of this award season is how is Netflix going to impact the Academy at large here?
And Joel and Ethan Coen, you know, in the adapted screenplay category, not in the best director category, even though I thought they did a hell of a job with that film. A couple final ones here, Mike. Boots Riley, Matthew Heineman, and Carlos Lopez Estrada. They also got DGA noms for their best first feature, and a lot of work by new filmmakers this year that was very, very impressive. A lot of people can be on this list as well that we did not mention.
You could say what you want about the gender issue, and we will have and will continue to have a lot to say about that as the years go on, if that doesn't correct itself, because it needs to be pointed out. But that narrative that started a couple years ago about where's the next great filmmaker coming from, we don't have enough new directors, the last 2 years have kind of put their dent into that narrative, I think, because we have a lot of great directors coming out for their first, second time films and just knocking it out of the park.
Agreed. And we got mad at that narrative almost immediately. So we're going to get into the nominees now.
Yeah, Mike, Let's talk about the nominees. So these are the five nominees for Best Director that are nominated for the Academy Awards. Like we said at the top, we're going to go one by one through them. We will tell you the case of why they will win on Oscar Sunday and why they will not win on Oscar Sunday. Once we're done doing that at the end of the episode, we're going to take a practice in what we call perfecting perfection. Don't worry about what that is right yet. We'll talk you about that and talk you through that when it gets here. But let's start, Mike. Alfonso Cuarón, why is he going to win? And I'll tell you why. And this is the easiest argument to make in the entire episode. He's going to win because he's going to win because he's won everything.
He's won everything. Golden Globe, Critics' Choice, DGA, BAFTA. I mean, he led all the other precursors in terms of the Critics Associations by over 30 wins.
I mean, this is the most open and shut of any major category, right? Maybe supporting actors in that?
Supporting actor, this one. It's most likely. Now, we're going to have a few, you know, Hail Marys to throw in this
certainly.
Episode.
That's the whole point of the practice.
You know, the composition is unique here, and I think it's uniquely strong for Roma. It's full of rich detail. The film builds extraordinarily well, and like we've been saying the last few weeks, memorable scenes and sequences at the end. While I'm in the end, right, Mike?
You could talk about what you see on film. You could talk about how his attachment to the film and what it is. This is such a unique piece of filmmaking. Mm-hmm. If you're positive on the Netflix agenda, you could talk about that tie-in there as well as how the Academy would always, it's wise of the Academy to make nice with Netflix since they kind of seems like have won the battle or at least now are winning the battle against the film festivals.
They're establishing themselves this year in a big way, no question.
So, and not to mention the recent success of the so-called Three Amigos, Iñárritu, Alfonso Cuarón, and last year Guillermo del Toro. They're on a hot streak now.
I think there are filmmakers. I think, you know, the directing branch and the Directors Guild, they really admire these guys for the quality work they do every time. But Mike, you know, watching this movie, you said it during our OSP, you're like, you felt something immediately watching this for the first time. I agreed with you then. Yeah. And I think that translates to Academy watchers. They can watch Roma once if they get through the beginning.
Yeah, if you can get
through the boring beginning, they're wieners, get through it. And then you have scene after scene, sequence after sequence that is some moving stuff. And it's undeniably affecting.
Yeah, without question. And again, if you think that film should make you feel, then that's one of the ones that will make you feel. But that's the easy argument to make, like we said. Of course, Alfonso Cuarón is seen as the likely betting favorite.
Right.
We have our betting preview, our Oscars pool preview coming up this week as well. We will tell you exactly what the odds are for all these favorites and underdogs. But let's make the case, Mike. Why will Alfonso Cuarón not leave the stage Oscars Sunday with the award?
Oh, boy, this is tough because it would be unprecedented.
Sure would.
But we've been saying a lot lately, Roma isn't an easy rewatch.
It's not.
It's a slow first hour. You have to really focus on it. Feinberg's going to talk about, you know, his canvassing of the Academy members and people that he talks to that they sometimes don't get through it.
Sure.
But I do think you have to focus on it. And I don't know if that's something everybody's able to do. Like for us, I can't write a podcast episode while I'm watching Roma. Mm-hmm. And come to a deeper understanding or a deeper appreciation of Roma. It's impossible. So
sure.
Maybe I'm biased. I just can't you can't multitask to this film.
No, that's a good point. And you do have the argument of the first hour being boring. It's tough to come up with reasons why he's not going to win, to be honest. Because like you said, it would be a historical upset. And I think the numbers, once we get into the betting odds later this week, are going to speak as much. There's a lot of support for other people in this category.
Sure.
Spike Lee's riding a momentum right now with a wave. That might be placated if he does pull off the adapted screenplay win. So we'll see what the DGAs have to say about that. That could actually tell us a lot about this category.
Mm-hmm.
Should Barry Jenkins win with Beale Street at the DGA Awards. Maybe Spike Lee gets that Oscar puzzles support, the mythicals rush of success support here. Maybe Roma won't be given their fifth or sixth category win on the night here.
Right.
So there are some holes. Maybe that can work out. Again, you're picking at straws when you're trying to find reasons Roma won't win here.
It's tough. He's probably going to win. And that's our Best Director category 2018-19. Alfonso Cuarón talked about. Check. No, I mean, we really love a bunch of these other movies, so they're worth talking about again. They're worth talking about from the perspective of the directors. And let's make this a rhetorical exercise here, because Yorgos Lanthimos from The Favourite, surprise nominee. Why is he going to win, Mike? Because he might have turned in the best direction of the year.
Yeah, it was really good. I mean, it's very signature, which is a weird thing to say, because it's the most mainstream of Yorgos Lanthimos movie.
Right, it's the most palatable yet.
But he still fits in the Yorgos style.
How about a year where you have Spike Lee, Yorgos Lanthimos, Adam McKay making palatable films for the entire Academy? Would we have guessed in years previous, okay, Yorgos, after The Lobster, is going to be nominated for Best Director someday? You know, for what?
Well, we made that joke a year ago when we were thinking we had The Favorite.
There's
on the calendar.
No way.
How are we really going to be in a reality where the Academy accepts Yorgos Lanthimos as a Best Director? And he's right on the precipice of it. Obviously, they're not as put off by his prior work as that. And not to mention, he also is a representation of giving the three-headed lead, and I do think they're a three-headed lead, even though two are listed as supporting actresses, but the three-headed lead of all females, he was the one that was directing them on set, and they are all three worthy of their own nominations in this year's Oscars.
Performances do tend to give the director some more credit there. I agree with that. Look, I think people respect this film, and they respect the film's composition in throughout the Academy and the entire award show because of how much they nominated. I think that's a simple answer. And obviously,
10-time nominee, yeah.
Yeah, obviously, I love the film. I've been gushing about it for a while. I've been raving about it. And I know it's a tough film to watch, though, so why is he not going to win, Mike? Well, Caron won everything else.
Yeah.
And Yorgos hasn't really been able to break through anywhere.
I know it's boring to hear, and it's what we keep talking about with The Favorite, but The Favorite had to win their home games. And that's what any championship team has to do, right? Defend home. The Favorite had to sweep the BAFTAs in the big categories that they had. They had to win Best Film at the BAFTAs to have a chance at Best Picture. Yorgos had to win Best Director. Neither of those two things happened. It seems so simple to say that this is a 1+1 type thing, but I really do think it is that easy.
Yeah. I mean, it's a respected film. Is it a beloved film? Or are they okay with satisfying the Oscar puzzle with other wins for it? You know, we're going to find out. And we're going to find out this weekend with those WGAs. It's not going to win the WGA now.
No, it's not eligible. It couldn't get in there.
No, yeah. Oh, that's right.
It wasn't eligible to be in the WGA. So
we're not going to find out in the WGA.
By that point, the WGAs, too, the Oscars voting is closed anyway. So we're kind of just in a holding period as it is.
That's going to make the screenplays more interesting anyway.
Sure. So absolutely, teaser, without question. Teaser. So speaking of screenplays, now let's talk about the guy that's kind of taking the momentum for the adapted screenplay category. Like we just talked about, we thought it was going to be Barry Jenkins' category in a runaway. Spike Lee has made it awfully interesting. Let's talk about why Spike Lee will win the Oscar for Best Director for Black Klansman.
Oh, he's been so snubbed in the past.
Inexcusably so.
And that matters with the Academy. They tend to recognize their wrongs, even if it takes them some time. Now, this is one of his most polished works to date. Everything flows so well in this film. And it's still a Spike Lee film, but it's one that is perhaps the most palatable of recent Spike Lee films on this awards-worthy level.
We talked about this in our Best Picture category overview, how Spike kind of acquiesced to the Academy in some ways. He kind of did go in a lot of the same similar ways you could say Yorgos Lanthimos did, but Spike did give in a little bit about the Spike Lee style, but he still talked about the typical Spike Lee things. He had a high mountain to climb himself in difficulty in regards with portraying racism and racist characters and hitting all those notes, but still doing it in a style that was more fitting, I would say, of the Academy.
True. He didn't sacrifice his substance, and he still had his moments, his stylistic moments. Mike, you loved the Kwame Ture speech sequence quite a lot. I gushed quite a bit over his finale in terms of that, you know, signature Spike Lee shot.
And that's the Spike Lee style,
Love that shot in every Spike Lee movie. Look, it's not my favorite of Spike Lee's films, and that's probably how we transition into why he's not going to win, but it's still a vintage Spike Lee movie and a B+ all day, every day from us.
Sure.
He's not going to win, though, because Alfonso Cuarón is winning everything.
Yeah, and what about the idea that Black Klansman wins Best Picture? And that's Spike Lee's triumph.
It's getting so much buzz lately on THR with Scott Feinberg and company. They are talking about it. They are hearing about it, I guess. I mean, I was, you know, reading an article just last week. Spike Lee is no longer at odds with the Academy. He's no longer arguing with the Academy. The Knicks might get a great draft pick.
Let me cut you off there. That's not going to happen. But Spike
KD
Lee
and Kyrie, they might get Anthony Davis.
Well, there's before your delusional runoff there, tangent. There is
Michael Jordan's coming
here
out of retirement.
If they don't want this to be the year of Roma, you could still give Roma your 5 or 6 wins, but not give it Best Picture. And wouldn't that be a great narrative after how difficult this award season has been in total to end it on the Alfonso Cuarón personal biopic wins a bunch of huge categories, but Spike Lee finally fucking won Best Picture?
This would be a feel-good story. Right. No question about it. And I think the Academy is not going to do it because they're going to give him the screenplay at the end of the day.
Probably. But I think if they do lean picture, it would at least give them an out to not vote him in as director here and give it to Cuarón anyway, which a lot of people seem like they want to do.
It's possible. It is possible. And it's an Oscar puzzle theorization like you've never done before, because that's a pretty it's a pretty smart one. Absolutely. Adapted screenplay is probably where it happens.
Likely, so yes, likely.
Next nominee, Mike, Adam McKay from Vice. Why is Adam McKay going to win this thing?
All right, Mike, listen. I know you have your issues with this movie. You've hid them well.
I am a stoic man.
Can you give a little credit, though, to Adam McKay? I mean, we're talking about how these directors would have these great stylistic influences and easy shots. What Adam McKay did, just in terms of a technical achievement with his directorial style in this, I mean, the guy literally shoehorned actual Shakespeare into the middle of a political propaganda, even if you want to call it a hit piece, and had it run smoothly over the duration of the plot while working in two or three comedically high comedic value false endings. I mean, it's not your typical political hit piece.
It's not, and it's very well done. And I think college aged also Mike, you know, after he went through his transformation.
Would fought over this a little more.
Would have loved this movie more.
God, this new also Mike is all grown up. He keeps talking about it.
The grown up one that just wants people to get along and is surrounded by Republicans in his real life who are wonderful people and who doesn't want to give them the middle finger.
Please take this olive branch.
Yeah, I don't want to give them the middle finger to their faces.
It makes
like
sense.
Adam McKay does in this movie, but you are 100% right. I do give him credit. I just wish the subject matter wasn't so biased. I wish he tried harder to get at the truth. I wish he waited longer to get at the truth in a way, because we joked about it in the favorite episode. If the Whigs and the Tories, if they made the favorite back in the early 17th century and the Whigs and the Tories were still at each other's throats year in, year out, about to, you know, have another civil war, God forbid we ever have another one again. Jesus, we're going dark right now. But Michael, you need some time. You need some time away from the Vietnam War before you get a good Vietnam War movie. You need some time away from these serious issues, and most times. I mean, there's a, you know, once in a while you have All the President's Men that comes on the heels of it, but usually you need time.
Are you going to make the case why it'll win, or are you just that staunchly against why it will lose? Because that's a lot of, I mean, look, you hit on a lot of highlights about why it won't win. The Academy cannot afford to lean this much into their political bias. They can't. They can't do it. And we've talked about all the reasons why in a lot of other precursor shows, especially our Best Picture one, where they are the tie-in, the contractual obligation this award show has to both ABC and Disney. They certainly cannot afford to isolate that half of the country. They need as many people watching as possible. So let's reset here.
All right.
Give me a reason why Adam McKay will win Best Director.
Fine, Your Honor. Fine. I'm not. Don't hold me in contempt.
These show notes are going to be a mess.
All right, a lot of backhanded compliments from me. Look, Vice is getting editing buzz now. So that, yes. I will say that this movie seems to be growing on a lot of people. I think Amy Adams' candidacy in the Best Supporting Actress category could be real.
I think somebody might have persuaded you of that.
Somebody we may have talked to recently might have gotten in my ear. I may just be plagiarizing him blatantly throughout this episode. His name rhymes with Einberg.
You gotta let that go, man.
Yeah, that shtick is dead, huh? Dead horse. Mike, he's not gonna win, though.
No, probably not, because Alfonso Cuarón's gonna win.
He's gonna win.
Yeah.
Unless we forget.
And again, it's not a glorious, beautiful argument, but so rarely do you have one of the big eight, we'll call them. Obviously, only one screenplay if you're counting, and it doesn't matter. So rarely do you have one of the big eight categories that's like such a lock. And the reason why everyone will lose is because the one will win, but that seems to happen, and we got it here in Director, unfortunately, and that's going to be unfortunate for Adam McKay. Paul Pawlikowski, he probably isn't going to win, but maybe at least he's happier to be here. But let's make the case. Why is Paul Pawlikowski going to win? What I got is it's rare for a foreign film to get crossover nominations from our Academy, so this is huge. Is it just happy to be here? We'll talk about that in a second, but this is big, and on a personal note, he hails from the second greatest country in the world, because my last name rhymes with Icky.
This movie is affecting. It really is. Pawlikowski self-describes the film as a melodrama, and before you freak, and everybody out there freaks, it's a melodrama that kind of works. You don't understand why they're doing what they're doing, and they're in love. They're a bunch of crazy kids in love. but it's so compelling and entertaining. It's a musical, and I didn't expect a musical out of this movie, essentially. It is, you know, wild. The cinematography is also nominated, like you said, crossover, Best Foreign Film Oscar as well, in terms of a nomination there. It's probably going to lose to Roma, times one, times two, right, times three.
That's again why Powell probably will not win. He is happy to be here, right? Like this is a feel good moment that this director of a movie like this, that a lot of people had in Best Picture as well. And if you were going to fill in the 10 Best Picture slots, right, I would venture to guess that probably at least 40% of the pundits would have this as either the 9th or 10th movie.
I would think so. So yeah, it makes sense.
You know, this is, sometimes there is a victory in just making the dance, isn't there?
It's definitely a victory. And in most years, this is at least coming away with that Best Foreign Film Oscar,
right,
if it's good enough to translate into other categories. But it's just not going to happen this year. I think it's a victory just to get more people's eyes on,
sure,
this movie.
Sure.
And that's really cool to see Polakowski kind of going a little more mainstream after Ida.
And we talk so much about the tie-in with, you know, Cuarón being as dominant in this category with what it's going to do for Netflix and vice versa. You could make on a much lesser scale, but the same argument is there for this movie in Amazon Prime with their, mm-hmm, streaming service, just like The Big Sick did for Amazon last year.
Right.
I mean, the streaming services do have a lot of to gain just by being here without,
definitely,
necessarily winning these categories anyway.
It's a major victory for Amazon Prime. I think it comes out later in March.
Yeah, late March. 22nd is sticking to my mind for some reason. Okay. I'm not sure if that's positive.
It's in
late
March.
Yeah. Late March.
Perhaps.
Maybe.
Or May.
I think June.
We don't know.
The early part of the September morn.
Sorry.
It's been a long day,
it's
people. All right. Perfecting Perfection is where we are now. And what we do, humbly calling this segment Perfecting Perfection, we take the five nominees from the category that we just went over, and we give them our personal ranking. So this is as if we were members of the Academy and had our own ballot to rank these on. These are not necessarily what we think should win. That'll be coming up this week in... what, the MMOs, Mike and Oscars?
Should win is MMOs.
Right, and what, not necessarily what we think will win, that'll be the Oscars pool
prediction,
preview,
yeah,
the betting preview. Again, a lot of recording.
Our heads and our hearts. We give you all. We give you all we have.
And that guy in Roma gave you his dick. So here we go, going 5-1, in order of our personal preference, as if this was our ballot. Number 5, Mike, what do you have? Actually, stop that. Flip it and reverse it, as Missy Elliott would say. Let me be at the forefront. We've yet to review Cold War, and the big reason of that is that I've yet to take in Cold War. Obviously, why I didn't talk about the merits of it on film today. We're going to do some type of review of it this week. We don't exactly know yet how we're going to handle that, but it's Paolo Pawlikowski is obviously my number 5 in the do not complete or the not available type way.
DNC.
Not saying that he's number 5 overall. But Mike, let's start with your number 5. What do you have?
Yeah, it's Adam McKay. I just didn't like the movie that much.
Biased bastard.
It fell apart at the end of the movie, though. I mean, the story fell apart. I think listen to In Session Film. I mean, those guys agreed with me. They're really smart, and they agreed with me, too. So I'm not the only one. Mike, who's your number 4?
My number 4 is Spike Lee. Look, it's not his best work in the last couple. It's not his best work ever. It's not his best work in the last decade. And I do think that's more... It's not a detraction towards Spike Lee so much as it is me being impressed with the other three. And yes, one of those is McKay for me.
Okay, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, again, we laughed hard in the middle of Vice. We really did.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just thoroughly... he's my number 3, McKay, but I was thoroughly impressed with what he was able... The balls on that guy to pull off what he did and have it work really is just quite stunning.
True. I have Polakowski, my number 4. There's a lot of things in that movie that I really, really enjoyed. There's a lot of things that I can't wait for Mike to see and yell about. Or maybe he won't. Maybe he'll love it just because it's an Ousky film. But I don't know. But my number 3 is Spike Lee, and I can't believe it because I expected going into the year this Spike Lee movie is going to be one of my best. Maybe I had too high of an expectation for it, but it's not one of my favorite Spike Lee films. I like his more stylish movies. Even that being said, it's still a Spike Lee movie.
Absolutely.
I still really enjoy it. He's my number 3.
You know what BlacKkKlansman has done for me most overall is, mm-hmm, realized how screwed The Inside Man was. Why wasn't The Inside Man, I think, is a better movie. It's
terrific.
More Spike Lee of a movie.
Yep.
Why didn't that get more support during its award season back in 2006 it came out?
I loved Inside Man. I'm with you.
Anyway, we have the same top 2.
Yeah, we do.
So number two for both of us is Yorgos Lanthimos. Number one, Alfonso Cuarón, because number one's got to be Cuarón. But Yorgos...
It is Cuarón, yeah.
Yorgos did a stunning job, really. Coming back towards the mainstream, but still making his type of movie and directing those three performances to play off one another, I don't think can be understated.
Agreed. And even that being said, as much as we've gushed about Yorgos' work in that movie and how much we both really respect that film... We voted Cuarón above him.
Yeah.
And this is our rankings of what we think is the best.
Yes.
You know, in terms of the nominees. We are re-ranking these nominees. We are perfecting perfection, humbly so, in our terminology. And Mike, we say Cuarón is a worthy winner and a worthy favorite.
It's really amazing that he's able to overcome. I don't know if it's because... This has kind of been the year of weak second hours, and his second hour was so good, or if it's just that we are willing to grasp and hold on to what we see last in a film as opposed to what we see first. But he was able to overcome, and that the criticism that that first hour is boring is a fair one.
Right.
And he's able to overcome that seamlessly to be a lock for this in other categories, and it's just such a, it speaks volumes about the job he did, I think.
I think he did an incredible job in this. He's wearing so many hats. He's telling such a personal story. This is a film that just floors you up on that first watch. And then when you study it, it has a lot of rewards.
Sure.
If you're studying it, if you're trying to multitask, it's hard to rewatch.
This is not a background movie.
That being said, it's also like very much an art film that I never thought I would just... put atop my list on the year. Because I, you know, say what you want about us, we have a more populist taste typically.
Yes.
You know, we just do. It is what it is every year. And usually I'm not putting the small art film, black and white foreign language film atop my list. This is high on everybody's list this year for a reason.
I think on rewatch too, like I mentioned in the Best Picture episode, it does, it gains its sweetness too on rewatch, because that first, what you think is a boring first hour, you are now able to mentally prepare yourself to see it setting up other things in the second hour, which is such a great payoff.
What we thought were things that are improvised in the script are actually deliberate, right? You know, she's saying something early on and you're like, what the hell? Mm-hmm. This is just, she's waking the kid up in the morning. And she's actually saying something poignant that has a parallel later on in the film. And it speaks to the screenplay, it speaks to the composition. This is typically a composition award. He's getting a lot of credit for a lot of different areas of this film here. And I do think his direction is a real way to reward this film and celebrate this film.
Not least of which that he's being rewarded for is his ability to turn the town and essentially have the A story be the background of this entire movie, right, which takes such a deft touch and such an artful touch to do, and he does it really, really well. Really a spectacular job by Cuarón. And, you know, sometimes you get locks and they are infuriating because you're like, this movie doesn't deserve it. This shouldn't be here. This is not one of those times. I think this is a very worthy winner.
Yeah, I think we agree here. Yeah, definitely. Listen to Awards Chatter's interview with Alfonso Cuarón done by Scott Feinberg. We're pumping him up all we can. We love his work, and we love Cuarón's work as well. And that's a great interview. It gives you a lot of clues into some of those parallels that he's worked from earlier films and how he pushes the form. And in this case, such a personal story, you know, worked its way through him with all that technique in his back pocket that he already knows how to do. And it's just really a perfect synthesis between the technique that he's been mastering for years and, of course, you know, the story worth telling. And, yeah, we think the world of Cuarón's work.
Well, the week, though, this category, the week and everything about it, ends with you, dear listener, however. Mm-hmm. We would love to know your thoughts and what you think about this category specifically or generally, and every one of these nominees specifically, I should say. Do you think one of us are way off base with our take in any one of these performances? Do you think there's hope and a more blatant path to success for one of the non-Cuarón nominees here? We want to hear it. If we didn't bring it up, we'd love to hear your thoughts. We love interacting with you guys. We are most active on these social media platforms where you could reach out to us. Mike, and Oscar on Facebook. Mike, and Oscar on Instagram. We are MM and Oscar on Twitter. Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com. Mike, and Oscar.com. And Mike, and Oscar on Reddit. We are available everywhere you hear podcasts. TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud. I'm going to go blind if I keep naming hosts. Did I miss any? I don't think so.
TuneIn?
Google Play? That. Yeah, Google Play is another one. Yeah, we're there. We're there. Yeah. All right.
We're most
just
everywhere.
Type in Mike and Oscar. You'll come on. Us. You know what to do by now. Mike, any words of wisdom here to wrap up the best director category?
I've been saying it all episode because we're on Cloud 9 after interviewing Feinberg today. Seek out Scott Feinberg. It's not hard. The Hollywood Reporter, hollywoodreporter.com, THR. Go to newsstands and pick up the Oscar issue of The Hollywood Reporter coming out
this week.
Sounds
like it's going to be something very valuable.
Awards chatter. If you go on YouTube, he's doing most of the Q&As out there. And the guy's a great interviewer. And we learned a lot from him as an interview subject. And, of course, we just had a ball talking with him. So, thanks, Scott. And, go out there, seek out Scott Feinberg.
Yeah, sometimes reality doesn't suck, but when it does, you can always come back and watch movies with us. We will be here throughout the Oscars week. This Oscar sprint finally crosses the finish line This coming Sunday.
Oh, my God.
Maybe at some point afterwards, you and I can rest. But until then, we will be awake, and you can reach out to us, and we love hearing from you, and we will see you guys next time.
See ya.
And the Oscar goes to Alfonso Cuarón.